Welcome to season 2024 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great tech. And now, episode 76. Excellent, Andy. So before we dig into Nexan and the beast, I'm really excited to talk about the beast, which is, you know, what you've been really known for amongst other things, which is a great name for a SAN, by the way, but we're definitely going to dig into that and the origins of that a little bit later on. If you love great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link on the show notes or head to gtwgt.com and follow those links. As a reminder, you can get to the podcast on all podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, all hosted and distributed by anchor.fm, which is now Spotify Podcast. And don't forget to go to YouTube, hit the like and subscribe button to get all future episodes and all of the back catalog, now 73 episodes deep. And with that, Andy, let's talk a bit about yourself. You've got quite an interesting history. You've been at Nexan for a while, but you had taken a break. But before that, just give me a little bit of background about yourself, and then in the lead up to you joining Nexan, and then we'll dive into the history of Nexan itself. But a little bit about you to start with.
No problem. So way back, I actually used to be an analyst programmer. So I used to be cutting code from analyst programmer through to project management. After project management, I effectively sold my soul to the devil and moved into sales. Ooh, and okay. progressed through my sales career, which has got a balance between vendor with the likes of Sequent through to acquisition by IBM, the Veritas is from very small to very, very big, and also from the reseller side of things as well. So I co-owned a reseller here in the UK and also helped run a reseller for another large entity. So okay. It's quite a varied background.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, so you know, you said that you mentioned that you started off as a coder. So what does drive? I mean, look, I started as a coder myself, but I'm definitely not a coder now. I saw the light and went into infrastructure. But yeah, how do you make that jump to go to effectively what ends up being a worldwide sales role with a vendor?
I'd like to say a lot of good planning, but in reality, a lot of it was down to luck and yep. opportunities that arrived. And I think one of the skills that I had way back was the ability to communicate and interpret between what I call techie geek speak and mm-hmm. business speak. So I was able to effectively bridge that gap in terms of communications. And that really led me on the path from analyst programmer to project management through to sales. Right. So being able to articulate something that's highly complex in a simple and easy to understand manner is probably what led me down that path.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. And actually, to be fair, I would argue that the skill that programmers don't have the most and developers have the most is actually that social skill. So there always needs to be an intermediary in there to effectively, you know, bridge the gap between what they do, what they understand, and you know, their customers, their partners, whatever it might be, even their incumbents, right? So it's kind of interesting. So yeah, maybe ultimately you weren't cut out for that because you had this greater purpose, which it was that communication skill that you say. So it's quite interesting. So yeah, good stuff there. So in terms of Nexan, was founded in 1999 by Gary Watson and his partners. So it's a UK company. Actual fact, I'm trying to think back on my 73 episodes. I haven't had a lot of UK companies on, probably four or five, right? So it's good to get another company out of the UK. Obviously, you know, I'm very pro UK being a ex-colony here in Australia. I love my UK, my British friends, so I'm always going to support that. But maybe if you can talk a little bit, I know you weren't around for the start of Nexan, but take us through a little bit of the founding that you're aware of and, you know, why the company was started and what the value prop was for Nexan at the beginning.
So effectively, Nexan actually, you know, had its origins, had its DNA prior to 1999 as a UK entity. It was effectively two entities, two sets of people coming together from two entities, which were originally called Trim and SpringTech. Those two entities were effectively RAID controller technology and okay. metal fabrication work to come together to form Nexan in 1999. Nexan as a company name was at the time a synthetic company name to get the URL, so next generation storage area networks,
Yep, makes
where
sense.
that
That's
emanated
awesome.
from. And effectively, at its simplest, Nexan was really driving disruption into the storage sector and doing things differently and doing things which other organizations said couldn't be done. And that really started by leveraging what at the time was commodity drive technology called ATA or serial ATA drive technology and wrapping those into a RAID array. So fundamentally taking commodity drive technology, wrapping it in terms of excellence in terms of engineering, which we'll come back to later, and in terms of in terms of protecting those data sets with RAID algorithms to drive the density, reliability, and price point in the marketplace. And that's really where Nexan started. And it really drove differentiation and really set the DNA for Nexan as a company. And from that point, all the way through from driving ATA into the marketplace, and the original names of the product way back were Atta-boards and Atta-beasts. That's where it all really meant. And then it went from Atta to serial ATA, so Satta-boys, Satta-beast, and then it's evolved over there. But the differentiation has not only started with the ATA technology, it continued all the way through to things like AutoMade. AutoMade, Nexan as a company released probably about 15, 18 years ago now. And, it was way ahead of its time in terms of being able to spin drives relative to utilization. Now, what that delivered from a business benefit perspective was significant reductions in power usage and therefore heat output. If you take, let's say, a disk-to-disk backup environment, perhaps behind Veeam as an example, then effectively they typically tend to be very busy during the night doing their backup stuff, but during the day they can be a lot quieter. So if you can automatically and non-disruptively spin that drive technology down, you can start to save significant amounts of power and cooling. Now, that was 15, 18 years ago. And we roll forward to today where the cost of power and the cooling driven by geopolitical events suddenly becomes even more important today. And that's the journey we've continued to drive forwards on, which is driving disruption as a privately held company. And we still remain one of the few privately held storage manufacturers, designers in the world.
End to
We
end.
continue end to end. We continue to drive that differentiation with our channel partners out into the marketplace, typically into the data center space across all verticals. So whether that's from retail to scientific to government, every vertical in between.
I was going to say, going back to that first part around the ATA and the fact that you were pioneering high density storage with the ATA Beast in 2004, that's absolutely ahead of its time. You know what I mean? Like, I think back then it was the big guys, the main sort of your Dells, your HPs, your NetApps were sort of there or thereabouts doing their thing with their big giant monoliths and, storage controllers and whatever they might be. So, for Nexan to be thinking already in that way in 2004 actually was very much ahead of its time because, I've obviously been, working in this space for, well, now over, well over 20 years as a systems platform infrastructure engineer and architect. I didn't really get a notion for high density scale-out storage until maybe 2008. Sorry, 2000, I'm going to say 2010, actually, really, 2010, 11. Is when we really thought about how can we not just think about a single, shelf or an array? How do we scale it for cost, for power consumption? Everything that you talked about only became relevant for me, during that time, let alone 2004, right? So, what advantages did you have as a first mover? What did Nexan have, that made it, think of that in an innovative way in 2004, five?
Ultimately, the data volumes in the world are ever increasing. That's a given. And driving cost efficiency, enterprise class capabilities into this space was way ahead of its time. Nobody else was doing it at this stage. And, kudos to the engineers, the original engineers of Nexan. The engineering excellence, I would say over-engineering of the product to drive reliability, has been an absolute foundation and continues to be the very DNA of Nexan. So, I mean, we've got equipment in the data center space, 8, 9 years old, still running, still under maintenance. I had an email yesterday where a client, we track on our UI, how many days without a reboot of a simple RAID device. And that, it's reporting 841 days without a reboot. And that's the key point with Nexan is the engineering in terms of reliability and resilience, in terms of managing heat, managing vibration, drives the reliability. So the drive failure rates of the drive that we're using are absolutely unheard of compared to a lot of the multi-billion dollar conglomerates out there.
That's a fair point, right? And I'm guessing that you're not using drives that are any different, right? You're using commodity drives that you're picking up. Are they enterprise grade
So
disks
they
or?
are enterprise grade drives, and we are very careful in terms of the certification and qualification of those drives, but there are only a limited number of manufacturers in that marketplace.
Yeah, that's
And
it.
the way you package, the way you manage vibration, the way you manage heat dissipation on these arrays is really the magic sauce relative to drive reliability. Now, with drive capacities getting bigger and bigger and bigger, okay, we've got RAID 5, RAID 6, one parity drive, two parity drives per RAID set. But where you start talking about 20 terabyte drives, you have to worry about drive reliability because when you start hitting rebuilds, the data volumes are so big now, you have to worry about the rebuild times and the load that rebuild is placing on your controllers.
Which was a big concern always for us when I was, working on those platforms. And, the biggest pain that I ever had with the storage system was when we did actually go for a non, conformant sort of popular big four sort of storage system. And they did promise the world, but where we did fall over was with the rebuild times, and we did have drive failures, unfortunately. And, I remember some of these rebuilds, it was ZFS based, right? And these rebuilds were taking like months, literally months, right? And then in that time, maybe another disk fails, and then you're really on edge because then you've only got one more disk left before all hell breaks loose. And then there would be latency that would be put on top of the disk stack, and then performance would suffer. So you're right, it's very important to consider drive reliability when you're talking about RAID sets in this way. It's actually, to be fair, something I haven't really thought about for a while now, because I've now been 7 years off the tool, so to speak, so I don't need to worry about that as much. But all the memories come flooding back in a good way, because I love playing around with storage systems, designing them, and seeing what were out there. So it seems like back in the day, maybe I should have been looking at Nexan versus these other ones that we looked at, right? Just on that, so where would you say Nexan's sweet spot has been? Well, where did you start off in terms of, were you more secondary storage, were you primary storage, and has that evolved over the years as well?
I think you're exactly right. In the early days of Nexan, we really did position ourselves as secondary storage. We did really position ourselves. Again, you had these very expensive primary storage systems. So we chose with our ATA and serial ATA technology to position ourselves as tier two, tier three storage. Over the journey since 1999, the portfolio of offerings that we have has expanded to the point at which, we're probably, one of the very few companies in the world where we have a portfolio of software offer of storage offerings combined with software, where we can actually talk to a client about their data needs, their workflows, and data integrity requirements, and then dial in, recommend the appropriate solution from our portfolio. So we're not constrained by this is what we've got to sell, so we're going to try and force fit that. We're typically having conversations about the client's data set, the workflow, their integrity requirements, their security requirements, and then dialing in what's appropriate.
That's a really good way. So yeah, the broad scope of products and the options that you have allows you to talk to a variety of customers at various levels. But I think it's great that you start with that integrity, because I think to a certain extent, well, not to a certain extent, it is the most important factor when I think considering a storage platform, because you know, you can have speed, you can have performance, you can have everything under the sun, but if you haven't got that data integrity part, if you can't trust your storage array to actually store the data correctly and not have issues, you know, with corruption, that's, you might as well not have it, right? So I think that's really good that you focus with that integrity as your almost your go-to when you're talking to customers. And I think also hitting back on, it was in 2000, you talked about Automate. That was in 2007. And in 2007, it would have been, if I can be a bit controversial, it would have been a bit like hippie-like, right, to be thinking about green storage back in 2007, right? A little bit out there type of thing. Like, how'd the company position itself back then? Because honestly, it probably wasn't a real concern back then, the eco-friendliness of the data center at that point.
You know, way back then, you know, a petabyte of storage was a huge amount of storage. I mean, it doesn't feel like it today. But for example, some of the lab environments, some of the clients who've got large amounts of data on Nexan, even back in those days, the sheer volume of data, even though the cost per kilowatt hour of electricity was way lower, the volume of what they were driving still drove significant savings in terms of using Automate. It's only now we roll forward X number of years and the cost per kilowatt hour has gone crazy that people are suddenly sitting and going, actually, this is a huge problem. So, you know, it's quite interesting how it's gone full cycle.
Yeah, and actually, to be fair, I don't think, I mean, I remember some of the early data centers. I did a data center migration back in, it must have been 2006, seven. So this time frame that you're talking about, where literally we moved into a new data center, and I was going underneath the flooring and just yanking power and three phases from anywhere I could find it, basically, because no one was metering the power. You know what I mean? It wasn't a thing back then, and that was 6, 7. And I kind of think that, you know, power started to become an issue around, again, that 2011, 2012, 13, where, you know, the cost started to become, okay, now we've got to start to regulate it because densities are increasing. We're going to pack more into a rack. It's not going to be, it's 40 RU. We could do 60 RU racks now. Let's see how much we can pack in. So obviously today it's all about that. Like everything, as it from a utility point of view, understanding your power consumption as a data center operator and infrastructure guy is critical. The public cloud obviously takes that away from you, but still charges you as part of their structure, their fee structure. There's a reason why you're paying cents per whatever, right? Because there is all of these costs that go into delivering that service. So yeah, it's very important. And then a lot of the green energies that you see, a lot of the renewable data centers that are popping up, it's huge today. And you know, spinning disk, obviously, I was reading today, you know, they're expensive, they've got lots of little parts in them, and they run hot, like you were saying. These things have got moving parts, they're mechanical, so by nature, by physics, they generate heat. Whereas SSDs and NVMEs don't generate as much heat, but that then this causes other issues downstream as well with that as well. All right, so take us through, you mentioned obviously you've got a right array of products. Take us through that. So what do you have in terms of the products that you go to market with? You mentioned the hardware and the software. So take us through your flagships. And I think you've got the Unity. Is Unity the operating system that goes across all of them as well?
So effectively, we have three solution sets, three pillars. We have our RAID building blocks. So you've mentioned one of those earlier, which is the Beast, which is I think it's on its sixth or seventh generation. We've kept the names, you know, because you know people love the name, and people keep buying it. But behind the scenes, it's effectively sixth or seventh generation. So we have a portfolio of RAID building blocks, which dependent on what the client needs, could be all flash, could be all SATA, could be a combination in terms of connectivity to the outside world, they're typically block storage devices, whether that's iSCSI and or fiber channel. So depending on what a client needs, we have a portfolio of RAID building blocks that can deliver against that need. We then move to Asurion. Asurion came by way of acquisition. Nexon acquired a company called EverTrust in 2005. And Asurion is all about data integrity and data security, data compliance. So for clients who absolutely must have 100% certainty of their data sets, auditing, compliance, that could be anything from radiology images, in terms of, I don't know, cardiology images, all the way through to mortgage applications and everything in between. So you've got full traceability, then effectively that's where the Asurion comes in with, in effect, worm capabilities behind the scenes. So highly, highly secure, highly reliant. And then we have the Unity offering, which is at its simplest, a unified storage platform with all of the enterprise-grade features that, most people at this point in the marketplace can't afford. So it has all of those capabilities in terms of snapshots, replication, in terms of block and file access, in terms of immutability, in terms of S3, et cetera, et cetera. So dependent back to understanding the client's need from a data integrity point of view, from a workflow perspective, and actually what they're trying to achieve, we can dial anything in from a simple RAID building block all the way through to a unified storage platform, all the way through to hardened data integrity and everything in between.
And you mentioned software. Is there a software element to this where people can install a software on some commodity hardware, or is that not an option?
So there's a software element with all of those solution stacks. So if we look at the RAID controllers on our building blocks, that's our magic sauce. That's our software. It's our algorithms. Everything is designed
Get
by
it.
us. If we look at the Asurion, absolutely, that's the acquisition by way of EverTrust in 2005. And absolutely the software wrap on that, which then leverages our RAID building blocks in a hardened state, brings those two together. And then the
Awesome.
unified storage platform is another software on top of our building blocks again.
Yeah, get it. Good stuff. So talk a little bit about, we did mention at the top that this is your second stint at Nexan, right? So there was an acquisition that happened in 2018. So StoreCentric acquired Nexan, from what I could tell. What was the deal there, and where did the company go from 2018 to 2023? And I think there was an element or something that happened this year as well, which has shifted the company direction again and obviously brought you back.
So actually my journey with Nexan predates me joining Nexan for my first chapter. I mentioned the earlier part of this conversation that I also operated and co-owned a couple of resellers in the UK. And it's during that time from my reseller world that we actually signed up Nexan as a vendor and started selling Nexan. So we actually had experience of selling Nexan and seeing the reliability, seeing the satisfied customers, et cetera, et cetera. So that was really my lead up to joining Nexan. And at that time, heading up EMEA at Nexan. So over the course of the following 6, 7 years, we built the team out in EMEA, we grew the business, the loyalty from the customers was amazing because I touch on the reliability again, because no vendor is going to tell you their systems are unreliable. Reliability is a post-sales experience. So once people have typically experienced the reliability of Nexan, they typically buy more and more and more because they know how reliable it is. So effectively, over those number of years, we grew the team, and about 6 years into my time, a company called iMation acquired Nexan. It was about a year after that that I left Nexan. And over those following years, Nexan was owned by iMation and then StoreCentric. Ultimately, I think it was about a year or so ago now, store hit Centric hit some challenges. But the good news is Nexan survived despite those experiences with iNation and Store Centric. And what we're finding now is the love, the passion for Nexan, not only from an end user perspective, from a partner perspective, but from an employee perspective, there's a huge amount of love for Nexan. So we're seeing, myself included, people coming back because we do love it. And we think there's a huge place in the marketplace for privately held storage companies which are disrupting the marketplace. People want a difference. People don't want to just keep going to the multi-billion dollar conglomerates. They want something different. Let's call us a boutique relative to the multi-billions, but we're special.
And to that point, I think it's, quite admirable and special that a company has managed to survive since 99 in this day and age of IT. The landscape is such that that's not the case, So, you see, there's great examples of storage companies that have come in, been disruptive and sell and then get swallowed. And then, their tech lives on in some way, but they lose the name, they lose the culture, they lose the customer interaction, what made them special to start with. So the fact that, 24 years later, Nexan still has that is quite significant. And I think that's a testament to, the culture, but also more importantly, the technology. Like you said, I love that anecdote about the post resiliency scenario where, every vendor will talk about, resiliency and reliability, but it's only in the post sale that you actually come to believe that and find out. Brilliant. I love that. That's really good. I've not heard that said before, but hey, it's pretty obvious, right? But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the move from obviously starting with ATA, SATA, high density spinning disk. How has the advent of NVMe and flash changed the way that Nexan has had to be in the market? Because from that point of view, the whole concept of where you guys probably started has shifted a lot because of this shift in technology and the cheapness. I think I mentioned before when we were prepping for the show, I think I read an article saying that flash has almost reached the price point for spinning disk now, which it's taken a while, but it's finally going to flip, right? And it's only going to get cheaper and cheaper, and therefore densities in flash will go up as well. So it's a whole new paradigm in terms of what we're dealing with. So how's Nexan dealt with that from a technology and innovation, and I guess even market point of view?
So, it comes back to our approach, which is to understand the data set, understand what's trying to be achieved. If we look at the data sets will typically determine the technology that should be leveraged. So, NVMe or flash SSD is amazing from random read IO. It is absolutely amazing and perfect for that. But when we start to look at sequential data patterns, sequential reads and sequential writes, whether that's MOVEit, whether that's disk-to-disk backup, whether that's surveillance, whether that's lab data, it doesn't matter what it is, then SATA is price per gig still way ahead of NVMe and all-flash. So it's really important to understand what is the client's data set and what are they trying to achieve. We can accommodate both. We could do all flash, we could do all SATA, we can do a combination of the two. So the great news is we can actually understand what they're trying to do and achieve that. We're not going to come in and say flash is the answer for everything. Now, back to the automated conversation, flash is amazing for the power reduction and therefore the cooling in the data center. So that's a great tick in the box. So automated relative to all flash, probably little value. The way you start talking about huge data densities of data, and effectively SATA makes a lot of sense there, then automate still has a play, SATA still has a play. And you know what? If I go back to my programming days, everybody said the mainframe's dead, tape libraries are dead, and all the rest of it. There's not. They're not. They've just found their place in the marketplace. So I don't necessarily see SATA dying.
Interesting.
NVMe or flash will find its space, and SATA will find, and they will coexist.
Yeah, that's a refreshing outlook, I think, on that question, because obviously on this show I've had a lot of storage companies that are, that way inclined in terms of all flash and whatnot. And they would go the other way for obvious reasons. I think it's kind of like they have to, but it's good to hear that your Nexana keeping the options open again, basically listening to the client, listening to the use case, which is very, very important. Let's finish on. We've got about 9 minutes left. I wanted to touch on a very pertinent use case that obviously crosses over, my industry, backup data protection, which is immutability, S3, and ransomware. So, how has Nexan been able to address, this ever increasing, I guess, consciousness on being protected at the storage layer, in the face of cyber attacks and malicious intent, and even accidental deletion, because ultimately we've all realized that data is super critical to our businesses.
So I think ransomware has been a huge marketing thing over the last few years. And when you start to look at people's positioning, vendors' positioning of ransomware immutability, you can very quickly see weaknesses in their offerings. Typically you're going to need air gaps, true physical air gaps. These hackers are very, very clever, and they can work their way into the backup and recovery regimes, which are typically the parachute for the IT department. So effectively, and again, I'm gonna touch on this slightly, which is, watch this space in terms of Nexan, because in terms of our RAID building blocks, yes, we have immutable capabilities in terms of Unity and in terms of our Assurin devices. But one of the things we're looking at the moment is, because we own the code on our RAID controllers, because we own that's our IP, we can do magic that other people can't do. So one of the things we're looking at with our RAID building blocks is to actually harden that to the point at which there's a physical air gap in terms of people being able to change the environment and do the environment. I'm smiling
Okay.
at the moment because, what we're talking about, and we're hopefully going to be launching very soon-ish, will actually give you true immutability on your RAID building block. So you could do a Veeam backup, your snapshots, and there is such an air gap that, it really is truly immutable.
That's actually quite intriguing, actually, because I have a, if you think about the MO for a hacker, if I was a hacker, the first thing and the easiest way to kill something on a disk is to basically delete the RAID set, right?
Exactly.
Easy, done, and then if it depending on what type of RAID set it is, anything but a mirror, you're effectively gonna lose it, right? So what you're saying is, yeah, go ahead.
You imagine me being able to stop you doing that, because I own the
That's
code, I own the RAID set, I own the RAID array, I own the controllers. You imagine me being able to stop anybody from doing that. It doesn't matter what network access you've got. Imagine if I was able to put a physical disruption layer, so you could still keep using the RAID array for your disk-to-disk backup environment or for whatever you want, but I can stop anybody from connecting to that device and doing disruptive stuff.
That's fundamentally super innovative, and haven't heard of it before. So I think if you can get that out to market, you're going to be doing really well, because I think if I think about the marketplace and the question that we always get, 3-2-1 rule of backup, three copies, two different medium, one offsite, and then there's also the zero that comes in, which is validated slash immutable. The immutability is actually the complex part. It's usually the expensive part as well, if you get it wrong. And then you have to kind of work with the software layers on two fronts. You got to work with, say, for us it'd be the Veeam layer, then you got to work with the object storage layer and work with the versioning and object lock there. And then typically speaking, it's been the realm of the public cloud as well, which is something that we can finish on, where the public cloud is seen as the be all and end all. But something like this technology that you're kind of alluding to, and that's awesome that we're talking about here as a bit of an exclusive, is that changes that paradigm a little bit, because all of a sudden I think people coming on-prem, they worry about that sort of thing where everything is encapsulated and contained on-prem for them, and that lessens the or it widens the blast radius because now one guy can get in locally and do a lot of damage. Whereas if it's separate, if it's on a public cloud and we're relying on the public cloud immutability, at least it's out of our hands to a certain extent. But there's pluses and minuses in that all the way. So is that something that you think will, obviously you do think it'll be quite big, but what's your market approach to that? How are you going to take that to market?
So, it's live and fluid at the moment in terms of the conversation. So that's working its way through. But safe to say, we're hugely excited about it. We're hugely excited about it. And we think it's going to be completely disruptive in the marketplace because this is not something anybody else can do.
No.
And back to the DNA of Nexen in terms of driving innovation into the marketplace at an affordable price point, that's what we're doing here again.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I think ransomware, and it all goes back to your earlier point about data integrity, right? That's ultimately what we're talking about. When we're talking about ransomware, cyber attacks, malicious intent, it's all about making sure that the data remains, in place, with integrity, with validation, if something bad happens. And anything that you can do along the way to make that more hard, or a lot harder for the bad guys to actually impact any damage, is a good thing. So, and again, to your point, it's because you own this end to end that you can do some really cool and innovative stuff on that. So that's pretty cool. Is there anything else, just to wrap up? We've got about a minute left. Is there anything else? Where do you see this whole industry going? We've talked about, the cloud. 2023 definitely been a year where repatriation has come into play as a buzzword. So we see people pulling from the public cloud on premises. Obviously, I would assume you guys have taken advantage of that. You are going to take advantage of that. Where do you see that going in the next sort of 2 to 3 years?
Again, X number of years ago now, the answer was the cloud. Now, what's the question?
Yep.
And if you look at the public cloud at its simplest, it's the same servers, it's the same storage, it's the same networks that everybody else is running just in somebody else's garage. So I think, there was obviously the mass adoption of the public cloud. I think we're la starting to land in a place now where effectively it's a multi-cloud, hybrid cloud world. Where people again back to the needs of the data and the organization and the killer apps that are fundamentally leveraging this data. There are workloads which are perfect for the public cloud. There are workloads which are perfect for the private cloud. And then the hybrid nature between the two, and then the multi-cloud management as well. So, yes, we're seeing organizations which are 100% pure cloud. And we're seeing people which are 100% on-prem and everything in between. And I think we're going to land in a place where it's effectively a multi-cloud, hybrid cloud world.
Excellent. Hey, great summary of that. And I'm really glad we chatted. I love Nexan's story. I love the name. I love where it came from. I love the fact that the culture of the company has been there for 23 years. And that's why, like you said, you existed, and you've been able to thrive in a very competitive landscape. So thanks a lot for being on the show. Just as a reminder, if you love great things with great tech, please hit me at Anthony Spiteri or at GTWGT Podcast on Twitter, or actually it's X now, isn't it? We'll call it X, or YouTube. And thank you for being on the show, Andy. Thanks to Nexan. And we will see you next time on Great Things with Great Tech.
Thank you.